When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Everybody, this is Phil Town.
And this is Danielle Town.
Welcome to the Invested Podcast, where we're coming to you from Zurich, Switzerland, and south of Atlanta, Georgia.
Indeed.
A farm out there, which shows you the value of getting infrastructure, code words for internet, deep into the rural parts of the world, deep into Zurich. Hidden,
I didn't know where that was going.
A little enclave hidden in the mountains in Europe.
That's
that
right.
No one can find.
Filled with underground bunkers, filled with Nazi gold and
oh, really?
All sorts of ill-begotten gains. Covered up with cows and happy, beautiful forests.
You better find that stuff and give it back to its rightful owners.
That's right.
That's right. Nasty Nazis.
It's the constant joke in Europe that Switzerland is like the evil money hoarders. And I shouldn't even say this stuff publicly because it's just like a little Swiss joke.
Yeah, there goes your Swiss citizenship.
Yeah, exactly.
Goodbye.
Yeah.
We don't need your type around here.
That's right.
Well, we are obviously talking
they're doing,
about
let me
investing.
Just say, they're doing a very good job around Switzerland of complying with the various money laundering requirements worldwide. Excellent job. I know many people in the banking industry, and it is their full-time job to comply with these things.
Doesn't it seem unfair, though, if you're going to go to all the risk of being a drug dealer, murdering, kidnapping kind of person, that you can't hide your money anywhere? That doesn't seem fair.
It's so much trouble.
All right.
I have heard stories from friends who are in the banking industry about how it, like, the stories are true. You know, people used to like show up with duffel bags filled with money and they would put them in their numbered accounts, and you can't do that anymore. Those days are gone.
I think in general, the governments have a surveillance process that is becoming more and more sophisticated all the time. And it includes our cell phones, obviously. They know where we are. They listen to us. Not they. There's not a they. It's just like machines listen to us. And we know, because if we talk about, I don't know, buying a garden hose, the next thing you know, here come ads for garden hoses. So it's extraordinary.
Wait, have you actually experienced that with just talking?
Oh, yeah.
I have not noticed that. I've heard people say it, but I've never.
Oh, it happens all the time. Absolutely.
To you personally.
Yeah. Yeah,
and you didn't write it in an email?
Oh, no. Just
nothing.
Picking it up on the phone. It's amazing, man. The whole 1984 concept of having to have a listening device and television, two-way television in your home is like, we got cell phones and everybody's got one and they can't live without them. And probably, I mean, the next step would be if they're surveilling somebody who has a cell phone, and all of a sudden the cell phone goes off, then they know for sure this. They're trying to avoid. Yeah, they're a nefarious.
Oh, you mean if they turn off the power?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh, I think you can even track now when the power is off.
Oh yeah, you can track when the power's off. You gotta get rid of it completely.
Yeah.
Like put it someplace. It's really quite amazing. The Taliban pioneered ways of fighting against our armies by turning off their cell phones and sending runners. I mean, really just back to medieval messaging. Next thing you know, it's going to be pigeons. When we were down in the Grand Canyon, a friend of mine decided to experiment with homing pigeons.
Wait, are you talking like recently or like in the 70s?
Yeah, in the 70s.
Okay.
Because then we didn't have, you know, the sophisticated satellite communication. And so if you're on a long river trip down the Grand Canyon, you can't, it's very difficult in lots of places in the Grand Canyon to even hike out at all. You can't get out of there.
Yeah, that's the terrifying
bit.
So
if you have somebody get injured, and you need to get a message out to somebody to get a helicopter or whatever, there was no way to do it. The only way we could do it was signaling an aircraft, and that is very unlikely to be effective. So back then, Wesley figured, well, we'll raise homing pigeons in Williams, Arizona, which would be where they'll fly back to, and then we'll take them down the Grand Canyon. So he did it. And
I'm missing the connection.
Well, if you have a problem in the Grand Canyon and you have to get a message out, you fly a homing pigeon out.
So you like wrap a message around the leg and fly. Okay, got it.
Totally, you know, 1683, you know.
Yeah.
So so Wesley brought a few pigeons with him on our test trip. And well down at the bottom of the canyon, which happens about 5 days into the trip, you get down where you're 5,000 feet down. And he released one of the pigeons, put a message on it, released one of the pigeons at the, you know, that somebody is going to be looking at the cage in Williams. And we watched that pigeon just circling up, 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 up. And then there was a poof of feathers.
No.
Yes. Some predator, some accipiter up there. Probably a falcon.
Oh, yeah.
Just nailed it. It was just like,
oh,
that didn't work. We didn't even think about those guys. So Wesley didn't want to have his pigeons die because he likes them. And so we took him on down farther down the river. We got about 10 days down the trip. We were camping at this big open sandbar, really a beautiful place. And in the middle of the night, at about 2 a.m., comes these pigeon screams. And
oh, gosh. Is this whole story about the death of pigeons?
Koala Monday, which is a kind of a cat / raccoon. It's got posable thumbs. It can open things.
Oh, my gosh.
Slunk himself in there onto the boat with the pigeons and got into the cage and killed them all.
Oh,
yeah. It was horrible. It was horrible. Not horrible for the cat. It was horrible for the pigeons, no doubt.
Yeah, this thought was clear. Yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that there is two sides to this story. One of them is
You cat. Brought a beautiful captive feast for
exactly. It was
for an animal.
Wesley had a very bad. He was very distraught by all this. I think.
I bet.
Yeah, it was sad. So, any case,
that's
back to that, I guess. We're headed to those directions. You want to have secret communications. That's where we're headed. So, anyway, I don't know how we got on that. But
I don't know, but I'm fascinated.
I think we're talking a little bit about the potential for a major economic train wreck in the United States. Anyway.
Wait, is there such a thing as like a predator homing bird that could beat off other predators? Like,
well, I think some roosters do pretty good.
No, but they have to fly home is the key.
Like something
like,
like
falcons
like
or something
that can fly.
Yes.
I'm not very up on
in Harry Potter. They have owls.
Ah,
can we have owls?
Well, I'm sure there are people that have sort of learned how to work with an owl. They raise them or something. But we do, like, my brother-in-law is an expert falconer. He's one of the best in the whole area. People come to him all the time for advice, and he hunts these beautiful hawks all the time. It's really amazing to watch him. I can understand why it's a real art. Hmm. But they come to his fist because he feeds them. Otherwise, they don't eat. And that's looks to me like to be the trick. It's like, you want to eat. The only way you can eat is you come to my fist, and then I feed you.
Oh, and that's kind of rush. So they're captive.
Yeah. Well, they're sort of captive. I mean, they can fly away whenever they feel like it, obviously, if they figure it out. And eventually, I guess they do, and they go, or you sort of release them by not. I really don't know how they do it. I shouldn't speculate. But they come back to him.
So we've not solved the technology requirement here, basically.
I don't think they figured that part out yet. This is sort of on my mind slightly, and a little bit facetiously, because I don't think we're going to have a civilization meltdown. But I think we are looking toward a pretty significant change in the way the economy is functioning and the markets are working. And I thought maybe we could talk about that today a little bit.
Yeah, well, we kind of talked about it like a couple episodes ago, about like where we saw the market going in the future. And as usual, we came to no conclusions. But you ended saying something like, what would happen if the interest rates went up to 6%? So one thing that, you know, people are wondering, and there's a lot of chatter out there, is about what happens if the Fed raises interest rates and how much could they possibly raise interest rates. So one thing people are saying is that they probably would raise them only a small amount, 1%, 2%, because if they raise more than that, the interest rate gets so high to the point where it's hard to service the federal debt. It makes things a lot harder on lenders, et cetera. It's just a big crash to the market, to the overall, not the stock market necessarily, but the overall economy dealing with that would be difficult. So that's what I'm seeing. What are you thinking?
Well, I think that's right. They they don't want to crash the economy. And basically, the Federal Reserve is a central bank in the United States, and its job is to maximize employment. And so it does what it does to try to keep people employed. And that was the reason it was created back in, I think, 1913 or something, is because we used to have very sharp, sudden recessions that suddenly you'd have all these people who were unemployed, and it was really a very difficult time. And then it would recover relatively quickly. Now we have much, much softer kinds of recessions, and they tend to take a lot longer to recover. But it seems to be better, except for one little problem, and that is that ever since they really put this scheme into effect in the U.S., they have been devaluing the currency at a very steady to sometimes precipitous rate. And that devaluation is felt by people as a form of inflation. So inflation is just prices are rising. And that can happen for reasons like there's just no supply and there's still a lot of demand. In other words, people have money, but there's nothing to buy, which is a little bit like what's kind of going on right now because of the supply bottlenecks as a result of a lot of people quitting working and sort of the labor bottlenecks being created, and that creates a supply bottleneck. But it turns out that their demand is very strong in the U.S. There's a lot of money out there, and that is the other side of the inflation equation. If you print money and you don't make the money supply disappear from somewhere else, which is kind of what happened in 2008, a lot of quote money, right, assets disappeared in 2008 because of the meltdown of the bond market. And so people had money in houses and house bonds, and they just disappeared. There was no money. So they printed a lot of money back then, and it didn't really create any inflation because they were filling a hole. But this time around, there was no hole in 2020, and President Trump poured trillions of dollars into the market. So there's a really interesting slide you could take a look at if you want to at the Federal Reserve. In fact, this is a super good place for this kind of data. Is the Federal Reserve in St. Louis in the U.S. is called the FRED, F-R-E-D. So if you Google FRED and then whatever you're looking for, in this case, M1, you just put FRED M1 in Google, and up will come a chart produced by the Federal Reserve about the money supply. And what it shows right now is so stunning. You should probably have to take a look at it to believe it. But in 2020, we had $4 trillion of M1 money supply. M1 money supply is just the money in your checking account and the money in your wallet and all that, and savings accounts and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So we had $4 trillion in there. And 24 months later, we have $20 trillion in there.
I think I've seen this chart. Yeah, it's like this massive rise of generally just money being available, household type of money.
Mm-hmm. It's unprecedented.
People are sitting here waiting with their money.
Yeah, well, they're trying to buy stuff. And as a result, prices are going up like crazy. So for example, well, going from 4 trillion to 20 trillion means that they have printed 80% of all the US dollars ever printed in history got printed in the last 2 years. And that money isn't being earned. It's just been printed. And as a result, you have all this money that wasn't there and now it's there. Trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars. And so people, some of them just got paychecks from the government and have been earning money kind of in their little side scams going on out there, you know, your little side gigs, what? Whatever you call it.
Oh, well,
people,
okay.
People where you're collecting
said side
cash
scams.
And
you know,
side, what do you call that?
Side hustle.
There it is. And so people are still earning money, but they're not reporting it to the federal government. They're not paying taxes on it. So that gives them more money to spend. And then they've got these payments from the government, even more money to spend. So all this money now is chasing a limited supply because we got a squeeze on supply. People aren't working as much. And you have more money in the marketplaces than ever on an order of like 5 to 4 to 1, something like that.
Yeah, but I think it's also just saving, aka not spending.
Oh, the spending is happening.
The spending's happening, but not as much.
Yeah, more.
What does more mean?
More means more than 2019. The demand side is higher in terms of spending, buying goods, all that. It's higher than it was before the pandemic started now. Hmm. And what that means is that you have X supply and you have 2X, I'm just exaggerating, but you have 2X trying to buy that supply. Prices are going to go up. People aren't stupid. If you got a lot of people that want to buy your house, you're going to raise your price. You have a lot of people that buy your products, you're going to raise your price. And then if you have a lot of people that want to buy the plastic that products are made out of, kind of a business to business thing, you're going to raise your price. And that's what Berkshire came out last year, and Buffett just said, hey, we're you know, they've got so many different businesses, 80 or 90 companies. They said, we are absolutely experiencing a price rise that's sticking. In other words, we are paying it. And we are also raising our prices, and the people we're selling to are paying it. And this is real inflation. That means the buying power of the dollar is deteriorating rapidly at a rate they just published of 7% per year.
Right. Yeah. But okay, I'm missing something here. So
okay, what are you missing?
The amount that people have in their checking accounts, money market accounts, etc.,
mm-hmm.
has massively increased.
Mm-hmm.
But you're saying that's not because they're not spending as much. You're saying that's because they have earned more money. So
well,
you're saying they're
money.
Spending the same.
Spending, they're actually spending more now.
But they have way, way, way. It's not even like a little bit more. It's like 4 times as much more money in their accounts.
Well, that's not exactly right. It's the 20 trillion, the 4 trillion that we had was money in circulation, let's just call it. It's moving around. Doesn't mean it's sitting in somebody's account for 20
so
months. It's
what
just
I've
in
seen,
their account, then it moves to another account because they spend it. And now that went up to 20. And so that's 20 trillion that's circulating around the economy now.
Oh, so this is something totally different than what I've seen is like this, what's in money market accounts has massively increased.
Right.
But
that's true.
Literally what's in accounts, not just sort of generally circulating around.
Well, that's part of what's
businesses.
In M1 is money market accounts and so on. Right?
Okay.
So yeah, people are saving more. They've got more in their money market accounts. They're spending more. They're feeling richer and they're driving prices up.
Yes.
Okay. Good. Now,
so prices are going up, I agree, but I also think people are not, I mean, you're saying people are spending more, so I just have to believe you, but that doesn't square for me with also people having more money in their accounts.
It doesn't, I mean, you know, let's say you get $10, you save $5 and spend $5.
Yeah, but the only way that works is if suddenly, like, overall, lots of people are making way more money.
Well, they're not necessarily making it. They have it. It's coming from something.
Yeah, it's right? coming from something. Yes.
And that something.
It came from their government check. It came from.
There you go.
Not spending it. It came right. from whatever. I mean, this is why the luxury industry went insane over the pandemic, because all of a sudden we were all not spending on all the things we typically spend on, like restaurants and travel. And it's like, right. oh, look, I have an extra $2,000. I can go buy that Louis Vuitton bag. And people right. did.
So we watched this, and the Federal Reserve came out last year and basically said, oh, don't worry, it's just temporary, all this inflation, this increase in prices. But that kind of surprised me. I mean, these are very sophisticated academics that, you know, that make these pronouncements. But it surprised me because I was seeing wages go up aggressively everywhere. Remember talking, I think, about Buc-ee's? You remember that gas station with like 120 pumps? And they've got a sign outside, Buc-ee's, saying, hey, come and work in our car wash and we'll pay you $18 an hour. That was a year ago. Now I think they've raised it to 20. Mm-hmm. So this is just a basic beginner job at $20 an hour. And so that the thing with wages going up is, I mean, prices might come down. I know, but here's the thing. With wages going up, they don't come down. I mean, you can't suddenly go to the guy working in the car wash and say, well, we started you at 20, but now we're going to pay you 18. That mm-hmm. doesn't work. Mm-hmm. People will get crazy on you if you do stuff like that. So if wages aren't coming down, it's a little hard to see that this is a temporary phenomenon. Plus, we've got another problem, a huge, gigantic problem in the way the Federal Reserve calculates inflation today. They've changed it dramatically.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Right? And so think about it. If they're calculating inflation differently than people are experiencing it, then a couple of things happen. Number one, their response to that inflation rate may not be as robust as it needs to be to knock it out. And number two, people experience it as a bigger phenomenon and start to believe that it's really permanent and start to act as if it is. And when it gets into your head that inflation is a permanent thing, then you behave differently as a consumer and you behave differently as a worker in terms of your salary. You want more money and you want it on a regular basis to be more money because your cost of living is going up, and you spend your money quicker. You don't save it someplace where they're paying you 1% if the inflation rate is 7%,
mm-hmm.
because you're just losing money like crazy on that deal, right?
So, I learned that right here.
All right, so look, we got to continue on this, and I think it's a super good subject. So let's dive into this deeper when we come back. You good with that?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay.
More next time.
Until then, time to go play. See you.
Thanks,
guys.
Everybody. Bye.
Hi guys, thanks for listening to Invested. If you enjoyed this episode and you want more information or to listen to additional episodes, visit our website at investedpodcast.com and sign up for my virtual workshop right there. Spots are definitely limited for this event. I'm not kidding. They really are. They sell out very quickly. So everything discussed on this podcast, by the way, is either my opinion or it's Danielle's opinion. And it's really important, it's not to be taken as investing advice, because I am not your financial advisor, nor have I considered your personal situation as your fiduciary. So remember that. You're on your own here. This podcast is for your entertainment and education only, and I really hope you enjoyed it.